Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about new Americans and civics today. The City of Columbus Department of Neighborhoods has developed a new initiative intended to increase diversity in local government. The New American Leadership Academy this week launched its first class of 15 fellows who will learn about civics and civic responsibility. Joining us is the director of the Department of Neighborhoods, Carla Williams Scott. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. The first class was last night, so you're kind of high on that still, right?
Absolutely.
What was
absolutely.
It like?
Oh, it was super exciting. We had our 15 fellows, and then some of our city staff participated that work a lot with our refugee and immigrant communities. And it was like being in the United Nations. It was really, really great to see.
We're going to talk a lot about Somali Americans and Somali immigrants because it's the second largest Somali immigrant population in the country. There's been a lot of influence from that. But this you're talking about people from any ethnic origin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We also have a large growing Bhutanese Nepali community,
right.
Communities from other African countries, mm-hmm. large Latino community. I mean, so Columbus is a very, very diverse community.
Why was this necessary?
I think it's important that our communities and our community organizations represent our community. Our office provides staff support to our area commissions and civic associations. And, you know, as I look around the table in those meetings, I don't see the diversity at the table that's the same diversity that makes up those communities. And so we thought this would be a good way to merge, and to provide some of that diversity.
How did you choose the 15 fellows?
We had an application process. We had the application online, I think, for about 5-6 weeks. Mm-hmm. We had the application online and we asked people to apply. And then we had an internal team of staff and a couple of our community leaders that worked with us to kind of go through the applications. And we looked for diversity in applicants so that we would have a good diverse pool. And we also looked for folks that would actually be able to participate. You know, sometimes your job won't allow you. The sessions are 5 to 7:30. And so we provide light refreshments because we're over the dinner hour.
Right.
And so we wanted to make sure that it would be people that, you know, their jobs and family commitments and whatever would allow them to participate as well.
Doesn't that, just by that very nature, though, cut the pool of prospective people? I mean, it does. Is it going to change over time to involve other kinds of people?
Absolutely. I think it can evolve. Again, this is our first cohort,
yeah.
So we're learning as we go. And so we're working with what we know and working. And we thought evenings would be a good thing. Some of the other, there are other programs in the community, United Way's Project Diversity. And programs like that that people participate in seem to have a good response, and they're held in the evening. So we thought at least people would be able to come after work. We know that a lot of, you know, folks from our immigrant refugee communities may work jobs that are second and third shift. So in our next few cohorts, we may look at weekends. So we're open to anything.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about immigrants and civics today. My guest is Carla Williams Scott. She's the director of the Department of Neighborhoods for the City of Columbus, and they've developed a new initiative intended to increase diversity in local government participation. It's called the New American Leadership Academy. It launched its first class of 15 fellows this week. If you have a question or comment about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned, Carla, that there are other kinds of organizations and efforts underway to increase diversity in different walks of life in the Central Ohio area. Why civics? Where did you see the gap in civics understanding?
Yeah, like I said, our office provides staff support to area commissions and civic associations. And those are comprised community groups that are comprised of residents in the community. Area commissions do things like review zoning applications when developers come through or want to, you know, a zoning variance for their community. And so what we realized was that in On the area commissions, in particular in neighborhoods where we know we have a large diversity, we didn't see that diversity represented. And so our concern was, you know, how do we get folks to know? Maybe people don't know that this is an option. And it's interesting because that conversation came up with our group last night. Absolutely. That they weren't aware of area commissions. They weren't really sure what they did. And now I think as we move forward, we will begin to see some of that diversity. One of the initiatives or parts of the program is a service project where we are asking each fellow to attend an area commission meeting or civic association meeting and pair up with one of the area commissioners so they can kind of learn that process. And our hope is going forward that they will, run for offices in the, to be part of the area commissions.
I know language is always a barrier, but a lot of people come from countries where they don't have a history of what we would think of as a democracy, participatory government,
absolutely,
that kind of a thing. How does that change the conversation?
I think it certainly will. It's interesting that you would ask that question. The first session last night talked about the different branches of government, first of all. And then we had a presentation from one of our assistant city attorneys talking about the city attorney's office and their role in government. And so we want to start at kind of a basic level and get up to that. And some of those conversations, those questions came up actually about, people coming from countries where they don't have this open democratic type of government. And so, we're really looking forward to that dialogue and how that'll play out as we go through this cohort.
What about divisive rhetoric among groups? We know that that's an issue in Columbus. It's a big city and people come from different factions in their countries of origin.
We may run into that. We haven't yet. We, like any program or, first meeting, we set some ground rules that, number one, this is a safe space. People are free to have the conversation that they want and or need to have. And we want, if we get to a point where there is some divisiveness, just like anything else, mm-hmm, we'll work through it.
We were talking about diversity of country of origin. What about age, gender, that kind of a thing?
I'm glad you asked. We actually have, so if I can give you a few quick stats, mm-hmm, we had 15 applicants, 58 applicants for this first cohort, so we were super excited. And we have representatives from 16 different countries represented, and the U.S., 14 females, 7 males, and they range in age 25 to 67.
I thought there were 15 people in the cohort.
We added two U.S. born. We added some U.S. born folks so that they could be able to participate in the dialogue.
Okay.
So the actual application process was 15.
And what about age?
25 to 67. Is
okay.
The age range.
Okay.
So I think we'll see
You're saying that with a big smile on your face.
I'm super excited. One of the other things that I charged my team when we became a department 2 years ago was to, one, increase the representation of our immigrant and refugee community in local government, and also to increase the young people, to get more young people involved in our area commissions and civic associations and block watches. And so to have 25-year-olds that want to participate in something like this gets me really excited.
Tell me about some of the topics that are going to come up. We know civics writ large, but what are some of the specific topics and who are you bringing in to talk to them?
So actually last night we had, like I said, we had a representative from our city attorney's office. Mm-hmm. We had one of our staff members who has worked in at federal, state, and city government talk about different branches of government. Next week's session will actually be a panel of community representatives that are on area commissions, civic associations, community police liaison officers, those folks that the area commissions would interact with. So that will be one session. We have a session on cultural biases so that we can dive into some of that, that conversation about, your cultural differences and what may keep you from participating in conversations or make you feel uncomfortable? And how do we kind of overcome that? We have a session on conflict resolution, conflict mediation. So that if you are part of a group and, you know, you kind of come to a stall, how are you able to work through some of those issues and concerns? So those are some of the topics that we have in this first cohort. And one of the things we really asked the group last night, you know, we said, you're the first. So we're going to be counting on you for, you know, to complete the surveys at the end of each session to help us, you know, let us know what we're getting right and what we can improve on.
A big part of civics in the United States is the media, the fourth estate. And that often is an issue, understanding how the media works, understanding the First Amendment and that sort of a thing. Is that part of the conversation?
You know, it's not, but it certainly could be added because, as you know, as you bring that up, that is really a great point that I don't think we thought about. So I think, in, you know, maybe in either this session or future sessions, a panel discussion with media about, you know, the reporting and how things are done. I think that would be an awesome addition.
And something that really differs between, say, a Columbus community of immigrants, particularly Somalis, and the St. Paul, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul area in Minnesota, where is the largest population of Somali immigrants resides is representation on the police force and MFIRE. What about those organizations playing a role in any of this?
You know, we talked about adding those kinds of things. Once we have the, you know, the group that may not necessarily be part of the program, but we think once we have folks that have gone through the program, we'll have this pool of candidates that we can share information with. You know, one of the things that I've talked about with some of our immigrant and refugee communities about, you know, one of the questions we got one time was how do I get a job at the city? Well, they don't understand the civil service testing process. And so we have our civil service team that goes out now and talks to people and explains that process. And they're doing the same thing with police and fire recruiting, kind of walking through what the testing process is and, you know, and what you need to do or what the qualifications are. And I think as we move forward, we will have candidates that will be interested and really have a better understanding of how the city works and then how to, you know, apply for those jobs or, you know, get involved should they want to.
Carla Williams-Scott, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
That's Carla Williams-Scott. She's director of the Department of Neighborhoods for the City of Columbus. They've started a new initiative. It's called the New American Leadership Academy, and it launched its first class this week. They learn about civics responsibility, you know, how to be involved in civic organizations. Going forward, we're going to continue our conversation about new Americans, immigrants, refugees, and being involved in local government or up the food chain. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Immigrants always have shaped the culture of the United States, but the presence of new Americans in government is scant these days. In Columbus, Somali immigrants make up the second largest immigrant group in Columbus, but they wield little political power beyond their own neighborhoods. Somali community leaders want to change that. Joining us is an Ohio State Somali language and culture professor who also serves as a commissioner on the Columbus Community Relations Commission, Jibril Muhammad. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
And joining us by phone, Ismail Muhammad, a local attorney who sought the Democratic nomination to run for the 25th House District, representing much of Franklin County. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Ann.
Ismail, you lost that bid for the nomination, right?
Yes, I did. Correct.
What did you learn in the process?
I have learned a lot. It was truly a phenomenal campaign. I was the first Somali American who ran for political office in the state of Ohio. So it definitely did have a huge impact, and we were able to register a lot of voters. We were able to educate a lot of voters for the first time. A lot of people voted for the first time. So it did have such a huge impact, and it really taught me the community. It really taught me, you know, the constituents that I live under and that I live with. So I was able to kind of definitely build my political base, but also be able to introduce to the Somali and New American community to other residents who are not so much aware of, you know, what our issues are and some of the concerns we have as well. So it did have, you know, transformational impact in my life.
It's interesting. You don't sound like a loser right now. Like there are a lot of wins. But it does reinforce the importance of just doing something that you did achieve a lot in doing this.
I did. I like to see the glass half full. So, I mean, I'd like to see the positive sides of that. And I think that, you know, I know that you talked about Professor Chambers, who did a study actually some time back, and I was listening to Director Scott just a few moments ago. Mm-hmm. Professor Chambers teaches at OSU, and she did a study to try to compare the Somali diaspora in Minnesota to that of Ohio.
Right.
Kind of what's going on. Why is there such a huge discrepancy as far as how Minnesota diaspora is just very much advanced when it comes to politics, you know, economically, financially, kind of what are they doing right that we're missing out? And she wrote a book, did a study, and was able to really find out a lot of, you know, we have a lot of the same concerns. It's just that maybe the political atmosphere is quite different. Minnesota is a blue state. There's also a lot of outreach that was done by the party officials there, by the establishment. There's a lot that we can kind of learn from as far as what Minnesota did that we can hopefully replicate here in Ohio.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking with Stephanie Chambers in the next segment. She teaches political science at Trinity College in Connecticut. And the name of the book she wrote that Ishmael Muhammad referred to is Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant and Corporation in New Destinations. Jibril Muhammad, you know, Ishmael makes a really good point that when people just see somebody like themselves, somebody that they can relate to, it motivates them to get involved.
That's true. I appreciate the work that Ismail has done over the campaigns this past year. It was really an eye-opener for many in the community. I mean, Somalis are political people in general. They want to be involved. They know about the political activities going on around them. But for them to be really involved, there are some barriers that exist. Another professor at The Ohio State, Amanda Robinson, in political science, is just completing a survey, and I was talking to her about the findings, and it's just about Columbus and how Somalis here are getting engaged civically. And what she found out, some of the facts she found out, is that 87% of registered Somali voters actually voted. That's much higher than the average population.
Right.
And yes, Somalis are voting, but the system in here, although Columbus is really a welcoming city, and I appreciate the work that Carla and the Department of Neighborhoods and the mayor and the previous mayor were doing to help New Americans by building the New Americans Initiative and now the New American Leadership Academy. Still, there is a lot more that needs to be done in order to get more Somalis and more immigrants involved in our politics and our civic life. Now, one thing that I want to make clear now that we're focusing more on Somalis, that sometimes gets portrayed as a divisive thing or something. That's not actually the case. The thing is, in Columbus, according to the Ohio Secretary of State, we have about 45,000 Somalis. Mm-hmm. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the immigrants who came to Columbus over the past 15 years, over 50% of them were from Somalia, that one tiny country in the Horn of Africa. So there is need to engage them. There is need to reach out to them. And we are on our part trying to do everything we can to be able to really get involved.
And the point being that such a large percentage of new Columbus residents, immigrants, are Somali.
That's true. And there is scanty of research that has been conducted in mm-hmm. that field, specifically on civic engagement. Stephanie Chambers did her research last year and the year before, actually. I was one of the people who were helping her through that process. And when she wrote the book, we brought her over to the Ohio State House and we invited all of the elected officials from Central Ohio to come and listen to her presentation on why Columbus is doing much, more poorly than Minneapolis in terms of Somali political participation. So the campaign that we did as Somalis, as Somali community leaders, to be able to bring the word out and create awareness among our decision makers and our policy makers is trying to pay fruits right now, and we are seeing the results of it. The governor has created the Office of Opportunities for New Americans, although it's not material yet. Mm-hmm. But still, that's a good sign. That's a good move. The city is creating this New America Leadership Academy. So we see some steps towards the right direction.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News right now. You just heard from Jibril Mohammed. He's an OSU Somali Languages professor and faculty advisor for the Somali Students Association at Ohio State. Also with us by phone is Ishmael Mohammed. He's a local lawyer. He ran for the Democratic nomination for the Ohio's 25th District, which comprises made up mostly of Franklin County. He failed in the nomination, failed to get the nomination, but he learned a lot in the process about what people need to know to get involved. If you have a question or comment for either of my guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd like to hear from new immigrants and about what you think are the biggest hurdles to civic participation in Central Ohio. You know, Ishmael Mohammed, you were born in the United States, right?
No, actually, I immigrated to the United States.
Okay, I apologize. Tell us what inspired you. I read about you that your family wanted you to be a doctor and you wanted to be a lawyer.
That is correct. I have, you know, immigrant families generally tend to lean in the medical field. So, I mean, I do have two sisters that are nurses. So, I mean, I was expected to go to medical school, but I really did not see myself being a physician, so I opted for law school and became the first Somali attorney in the state of Ohio just last year, actually. So it did have such a huge impact. But I think one of the biggest barriers that immigrants face, I think, definitely is that there's obviously language barriers. That's also always problematic. And I think that we have made some improvements the past year, especially since my campaign, of reaching out to party officials, reaching out to the Board of Elections to make sure that we have volunteers, we have staff there that speak the language that are able to help out as far as the actual voting process. I'm also currently working with the Ohio Democratic Party to ensure that that we're also translating and making sure it's a lot easier for immigrants, for the Somali community, to understand what the issues are and what's going on. So there's a lot of outreach that we're doing as well to make sure that we're roping in a lot of the immigrant population who have a lot of legitimate, you know, language barriers, educational barriers, in finding out what's going on, what issues align with their concerns, and to make sure that they're actually voting. So there's a lot of hurdles that hopefully we're going to be clearing soon.
What about the Board of Elections? You mean people waiting on election day there, you know, representing different communities right there on election day?
Yes. So basically we had spoken to the Board of Elections to make sure that volunteers were being hired to actually work there that spoke Somali, that spoke Arabic, that spoke different languages that were needed in the community to make sure, because a lot of people that were coming there for the first time who didn't speak English, who had no idea what they needed to vote. So even the mechanics were off. So we wanted to make sure that every citizen has an opportunity to vote. And I think that starts with us as well, of reaching out, of making sure that we're making ourselves available to help others as well.
You also worked hard to get younger people involved in your campaign. What was that like?
It was definitely hard. I think a lot of young people, I mean, they're fortunate that they speak the language. I mean, a lot of them were born here, so they understand what's going on. A lot of the young kids don't get politically active. I think we've been seeing a big change and a big switch in that now they're being more active, especially with the school shootings, with a lot of concerns that has been happening more recently. And I think especially with the Trump campaign, I think that definitely had a huge impact. It was a huge awakening for the immigrant community, because I think now we're seeing that politics isn't something that's just out there, that is just a hobby that you can kind of get involved in, but it's something that has real, tangible life consequences. We're seeing that when families are being ripped apart at the border. We're seeing when families are being deported, you know, residents that have been here a while. So we're seeing life-altering consequences. You know, politicians have real-life impact on our lives, and we're seeing that. So I think that's changing the idea of politics. I think a lot of young people are getting active as well.
Jibril Muhammad, what do you think is missing in education for young people today? You know, civics isn't as big a deal as it used to be back 100 years ago when I was a kid. What do you think's missing?
So for a new American kid whose parents are immigrants who was born here, the challenges are much more than just the average person because...
It's, you know, more than language, too.
Yeah, it's just more than language. And the thing is, for now, the way things work is that we rely on people like Ismail that are motivated to run, that are motivated to really be civically engaged for things to happen. And there is need for more from the political parties, from the trade unions, from government agencies, from nonprofits to really support the emergence of young leaders who can make an impact in their communities so that we can all live in a better, a greater community that we can all build. Now, there are some steps towards that. I know of CARE Columbus that's now hiring election agents who speak different languages, including Somali, and that's a positive thing. That was not the case in the past. People came and sometimes they were confused about how they would vote and who they would vote. And maybe they just came for one person, the president or, you know, the mayor or somebody. And the rest of the ticket, they do not know who the lineup is and where to go from there. So I think there is need to be more civically engaged for young people. There are some opportunities, for example, at the Ohio State University, we have the Somali Students Association mm-hmm. that is doing a lot of great work that's connecting Somali students there with the outer world and organizing them. Ismail used to be involved when he was a student there. It's a great opportunity. There is need for creating more of that in other different institutions and in the wider community as well.
Ismail Muhammad, what inspired you to run for public office? I mean, it's one thing to be a lawyer. I'm sure you're in dire, you know, people are in dire need of a lawyer that, for one thing, that can speak their language, but just represent a different point of view in the world. But why public office?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think, I think I have been active in a community for the past 6-7 years, kind of volunteering with various nonprofits, been active with different associations, political groups, as Professor Jibril mentioned, the Somali Student Association at OSU. So I think my involvement throughout those different things that I've been involved in, I have seen kind of just the lack of voices being heard in the immigrant Somali-American community. And the more I saw that, the more I figured, hey, this is something that I can do, especially after I, you know, finished law school. I felt that I was already engaged. I knew what the issues were. I felt that it's an opportunity for me to come up. But also, I've also been inspired by other campaigns, like Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, who became the first state representative back in 2016, correct?
Right.
And now she won the primary for Congress. And
oh, I didn't know
first
that. Okay.
Female Muslim, the first female Muslim in the nation. So, I mean, her campaign had a huge impact. There's also other amazing folks, such as a fellow that won a mayorship in, his name was Wilmot Collins, the first Liberian immigrant that won mayorship in Helena, Montana. There's been a big rise in immigrants and new Americans seeking office because they're seeing now the direct consequences of not being involved.
What was your biggest?
That definitely had a push.
What was your biggest obstacle, do you think?
I think the biggest obstacle was that I was definitely pretty young. I have not ran for political office.
You were running against an incumbent as well.
Sure, absolutely. I was running against an incumbent who had a lot of money, who was backed by the party. So I think it's always difficult to beat an incumbent.
Right.
And I think I have done a pretty good job of really galvanizing the community and reaching out to other communities as well. But I think it's just hard to be able to beat an incumbent in any given race.
All right. So what's next for you politically?
I do have political aspirations going forward. You know, I'm still going to stay active in the community to make sure that that I'm just filling a void. I've been working with, you know, I've been reaching out to, you know, the mayor's office, city council, working with them on any initiatives as far as the new leadership program as well that, you know, Director Scott was talking about. So just staying active. I do have political aspirations in the future. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I'm directly vying for now. Mm-hmm. But definitely going forward, I do have political aspirations.
I want to take a call now from Muhammad in Columbus. You're on the air, Muhammad. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure to ask those two young, people my question. Hey, I'm also a Somali community. You know, I can see there's a clash culture between the Somali community and other community. For example, last week I was my other job, so one of the female, you know, entered the office. She was shaking the hand with other two guys. So she was trying to shake my hand too, and I just told her I can't shake my hand you because of, you know, my culture, my religion.
Religion, so right.
How can we educate other community to understand our culture since we are newcomers to the United States?
Well,
that's my question.
You know, Jibril Muhammad, you shook my hand when we met today. It's not, everybody's not the same, but what about that? What about cultural understanding on mutual understanding, I suppose?
So that's a good question. Thank you for the question, Muhammad. You know, I often speak to teachers and professionals who talk about issues that they face with the community members that they interact with. And one of the issues is handshakes and things, and people take it as, you know, disrespectful when their hand is not shaken. But the thing is, as much as there is need for Somalis and immigrants to be civically involved, we also have collective responsibility to learn about our newest neighbors and to understand them and to help them become part of our fabric. In 2015, there was, 16 actually, there was an incident at OSU that generated lots of interest from the Central Ohio community. That was positive. People wanted to learn about the Somalis. They wanted to learn about Somali culture. And the Ohio State University gave me a semester release from teaching for me to go to the African-American Community Extension Center and provide cultural training for people coming in and learning about the community. And it was really amazing how many people wanted to come, how many people were interested in a course that taught about, you know, the culture. And because of that, Ohio State is now developing an immersion course in Somali culture that will teach people about the experiences of Somalis in Columbus, their integration experiences, their cultural practices. And it is okay to be an American, committed to the American democracy that also has a distinct culture and religion. So standing up for yourself, saying this is my faith, I need to pray and I need not to touch a person from the opposite gender, that's okay. That what you did is the right thing. That's educational in itself.
I wanted to ask, Muhammad, are you still there?
Yes, I'm
I want to ask you, just why don't we take this moment as a teaching moment then? Instead of shaking a hand, how do you show respect for somebody you're meeting for the first time? What's an alternative?
You know, actually, when it comes showing respect with other people, it's central our culture and our religion. We have to show respect all time, wherever you come from, whether you are, I mean, female or male, we have to show you. So when it comes to female, it's kind of like difficult. But what I do, I touch my heart, you know, and I do apologize. I just told them, like, I respect you, and you show me much more respect than I say, but yeah. I cannot shake my hand unless you're my wife or you're my daughter or you're my aunt or, like, you're my
relative,
grandma,
yeah.
Or mm-hmm. relative.
Yeah.
So we show them we care them still. We show them we care them. But the biggest clash is the public transportation, education, and also, like, workplace. Also, even, like, the parents, when they go to the hospital, that's a big issue.
Right.
Like, well,
I don't want to cut you off, but we have to take a break right now, Muhammad. And I really appreciate your call because you're just bringing up some great issues. I mean, just everyday things, Ishmael Muhammad, riding the bus, going to the hospital, things like that. People who are born here, they take it for granted. They know.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a good question, especially with the shaking in the hands, because that's something that's pretty standard that, you know, a lot of cultures practice.
Right.
And when you don't know, when you extend your hand for someone and they don't shake it, normally you would take offense to that. But I think if you take, just like Muhammad said, if you take the chance to explain and say, hey, I apologize, I'm not being offensive at all, this is the cultural thing, I respect you. And if you take the time to explain that, I don't think anyone's going to get offended, because I've been in situations where I was with a Muslim girl girl who, you know, another guy extended his hand, or, you know, and she didn't feel the need to shake it, so she respectfully explained it. So I think it's just cultural competency, understanding. I know that I've done a lot of seminars for various institutions, whether it's employers, to just kind of educate them on the Muslim community as far as praying five times a day, as far as, you know, dietary restrictions, as far as, you know, just when to call family members. You know, there's a lot of just kind of cultural differences that over time I think we mold into each other. Over time I think they'll dissipate, but for now it does require a lot of education and outreach.
Well, Ismail Mohammed, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Anne.
Ismail Mohammed, a local lawyer. He ran to be a legislator for representing Ohio's 25th district, mostly Franklin County, and the Democratic did not succeed in getting the Democratic nomination, but did learn a lot, and he's been sharing it with us. Also, Jabril Mohammed, OSU Somali professor and faculty advisor for the Somali Students Association. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much, Anne.
We will continue our conversation. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about new immigrants and civics. Still with us is OSU Somali language professor Jabril Mohammed. He is faculty advisor for the Somali Students Association at Ohio State. Stephanie Chambers teaches political science at Trinity College in Connecticut. She's the author of the book Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations. She joins us by phone. Welcome back, Stephanie Chambers.
Thanks for having me, Anne.
The dearth of immigrants in local government isn't just a Columbus phenomenon, but compared to Minneapolis, St. Paul, Columbus lags in many areas, right?
That's true. That's true. So in my book, I outline some of those areas where political incorporation is lower for Somali Americans in Columbus versus the Twin Cities.
One of them is there are some formal gaps. There's some informal gaps. What is it about Minneapolis-St. Paul that you think is more embracing of new immigrants compared to Columbus?
Sure. Well, I mean, there are a few things. One of the formal things is that they have an electoral structure that is more open to new groups coming in. So they have a ward-based electoral system, which has created opportunities for groups that hadn't been in elective office before. So that's a real positive, and we're seeing some individuals climbing and, of course, running for the U.S. Congress now.
Right, Ilhan Omar, right?
Exactly. So that's one of the striking differences between a place like Columbus, Ohio, and Minneapolis or St. Paul. But there are a number of other things, I think, that have happened where political parties, for example, in the Twin Cities have really tried to mentor and provide leadership opportunities for Somali Americans. And that hasn't happened to the same extent as in Columbus. However, there are some promising things that are going on right now, one of which being the New American Leadership Academy in Columbus, yeah, which I was pleased to hear about.
Ilhan Omar, a Minnesota state legislator, she won the primary for the Democratic primary for Congress. Tell us how she kind of broke that glass ceiling for immigrants, or at least Somali immigrants.
Well, I think she brought a voice to the table that was underrepresented, and I think people were very respectful of the ideas and the perspective that she brought to the table. I think that is key. She was also, you know, in the state legislature in Minnesota. She won that office and right, has a track record as an elected official, which is helpful in climbing up to the congressional level. And that's something that we don't see so much in Columbus, of course.
You know, Columbus residents voted and did not embrace an award system in the city. But
right,
you're right. And that's a more of a local form of politics that is not, they don't have access to something like that here. That would make a big difference.
Right. And you know, and other things that I point out in the book are things like the role of unions in providing leadership opportunities in the Twin Cities. You don't see that same opportunity in Columbus. And so, you know, the promising thing that I think is going on in Columbus is that you have a lot of new Americans who are speaking up, some trying to run for office, but also trying to engage in education so that there's a better understanding of the Somali community and other immigrant communities. I feel like that holds a lot of promise. So that's a positive, but there's still a long way to go. And so I think looking to the Twin Cities can be helpful for a city like Columbus as you move forward.
Jabril Mohammed, Stephanie Chambers wrote the book a couple years ago. What do you think's changed in Columbus in just the last couple years?
So actually, the discussion around immigration and immigrants in Columbus was about the basics. I mean, how do we provide, you know, transportation to medical appointments? How do we teach people English? Basic things, ESL. Now, since that book came out and since Stephanie was here at the High State House to speak to policymakers and legislators and elected officials, I mean, many people that were supportive of the Somalis and immigrants in general came, including state representatives, council members. And what happened is that the discussion around civic participation and engagement has really taken off. And that's why you see some appointments to boards and commissions. I mean, prior to my appointment to the Community Relations Commission, there was no Somali on any city commission or board. There is now a Somali sitting at the New African Immigrants Commission at the state level. There is the Office of Opportunities for New Americans. So things are opening up in some ways, and that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. I think there is need to do more research, more education, more outreach, more information, and that will help programs like yours that you're doing today will inform people and you know, clarify that Somalis are here to stay. We are American citizens. We are part of this fabric. We are in this country. And our voice will make our democracy better and stronger.
Omar and Lewis Center, you're on the air. Hi, Omar.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I just want to make a quick comment, if you don't mind. Yeah. Speaking of experience, from experience, actually, and Jabril knows me. I know him. I worked with him for a little bit. You know, I worked in the Somali community for a while, and I happened to write a guide to the Somali culture in 2007, which has been distributed to law enforcement and educators in Franklin County and some other counties. I can tell you how urgent it is for the Somalis really to open up and explain their culture to the American people, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about the Somali culture, the Somali system, traditions, so on. At the same time, I really think that also Somalis need to know a lot about American system as well, because, you know, the sudden influx of Somali immigrants in 1991 really created also this, you know, gap. And I've been trying my best to bridge the gap, but I hope really the efforts continue. But I just want to emphasize how urgent it is to create this community engagement so people could know something about the Somali culture.
Is the gap a function of, because there were so many people from the same place, they could kind of insulate themselves and be part of that insulated group and not have to reach out? Is that part of the issue?
Well, part of the issue actually was a problem the federal government really did, where they really brought so many Somalis and they really gave them an orientation about American culture, 4 hours orientation in English, yeah. And most of them could not even speak English at
right.
that time.
Yeah,
so
that doesn't make
really
sense.
So there is this misunderstanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Stephanie Chambers, does this sound like a familiar observation?
Yeah, it does. You know, and I was thinking of this in, you know, in two different ways. One of them is, you know, how do we better, you know, support new Americans and refugee communities as they come to the United States and provide adequate information for them? The example that was just provided obviously isn't adequate. But on the flip side, and it was an issue that you were addressing before the break, it's how do we educate other Americans about cultures that we're unfamiliar with. And I keep going back to the issue of educating young people, that if we have students, in, let's say, the Columbus public schools who are educated by Somali teachers or who do readings. There's actually a really good book called From Somalia to Snow, How Central Minnesota Became Home to Somalis by a woman named Huda Ibrahim.
Yeah.
And it's from St. Cloud, Minnesota. And it has this great, it's very easy read. I just did a review of it. And I said, this would be really helpful for like high school students, for healthcare professionals, for people to understand these issues, like, you know, about the handshake, about medical care, and about other issues that are so important to providing opportunities and fair treatment for groups like Somalis. I think some of the responsibility falls on us who are not from a community, who are in the majority, to say, what is it that we can do to educate ourselves?
Jibril Mohammed, you're kind of nodding your head. yes, right. How do we do it? What do you think?
So I first of all thank Omar for the question. Speaking about the issue of insulation and community, the community sticking together, living
which is common. I mean, that's typical with immigrant communities. It's very healthy in its way.
Definitely, yeah. That's actually where I was going.
Yeah,
it's actually healthy. What research shows is that communities that are working together, that are in group, that have in-group civic engagement, and individuals who are part of that civic engagement are really the ones who go out and engage in the wider public. People like Ismail, who has been very involved in Somali affairs and Somali community activities and events, comes out and says, hey, let me go and run for office. And more of that is needed in order to be able to work on changing the situation. Now, one thing that I wanted to mention is that about Somalis learning about Somali culture, American culture, that is happening. It's a mandatory thing for somebody to become a citizen, that they have to pass a citizenship test that asks about anything from the three layers of government to the history of the United States to, you know, our laws and rules and everything. Now, what I wanted to say about Columbus is that Columbus did not have an experience of an immigrant group that was completely different in their language, in their culture, in their race, in their everything. The prior immigrants to Columbus, the closest that we can get to Somalis would be people like people from the Soviet Union. There were some, but they were not as significant in numbers. Now, in Minneapolis, there was the Hmong community that was already there.
The Cambodians, the Hmong. Right.
Yeah. Yep. So those communities already set the stage for integration of new Americans.
Gotcha.
Columbus Somalis happened to be the first Muslim group, the first black group, the first immigrant group that's in big size. And all of those come with some backlash from the general public. There is bad view. I mean, people view negatively anything immigrant-related. People view negatively since 2001 anything Muslim-related, and Somalis are all of the above. So there is a, as Stephanie said, need for the wider public to really understand that, you know, there are people have perceptions about you even before you interact with them. I can narrate stories about things that happened to people that had nothing to do with, you know, with themselves and their performance as individuals.
Stephanie, we're just about out of time, but does that, Stephanie Chambers, does that, the fact that the Twin Cities had a previous non-English speaking, very culturally different group that kind of laid the groundwork?
Yes. I mean, it made a tremendous difference.
Okay.
And I like to look at it in a positive way, that Columbus has the potential to be that sort of a community in the future. So if we take Minnesota's example and the reception of Hmong, particularly in St. Paul, and how that created an infrastructure to support new Americans, like Hmong became, we could see something similar in Columbus. And I think that's a promising thing. So I feel like we need to look at the positive end of this and new programs, new individuals who are really engaged civically and want to be part of the community and reflect the voices of those who have not been heard is a really great thing that's going on.
Stephanie Chambers, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Stephanie Chambers teaches political science at Trinity College. She's the author of the book Somalis in the Twin Cities and Columbus, Immigrant Incorporation in New Destinations. And Jibril Mohammed, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Jibril Mohammed, an Ohio State Somali language professor and faculty advisor for the Somali Students Association. That's it today. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.